Welcome to the Millionaire Secrets Podcast, where the most successful people in the world share their secrets to help you create the awesome life you desire. Welcome to another episode of Millionaire Secrets. Jeff Lerner, your host, always thrilled to be here with you as we get to meet some of the most successful people on the planet and hear their amazing stories of overcoming hardship and challenges. And we've had a lot of really successful people on the show. To date, we've never had anyone who was like, oh yeah, it was easy. I was just born and I was rich and cool and successful and nothing bad happened. So that means if we can do it, you can do it. And that's what we're here to talk about. Today, we're joined by Rafael Eliasson. He is a coach up in the north of Norway. Makes my teeth chatter just hearing that. But he was not always so successful and cool. I don't even know if he's okay with me saying this, but his bio reads like he used to be a caricature of an unsuccessful person. He's a self-described obese janitor, which, you know, if you're going to draw a cartoon of like, what's someone who's kind of down on his luck look like? That might be the cartoon. And yet here he is. If you're watching this on YouTube, clearly he's not obese. And what you're about to find out is how successful and amazing he is and what a great story he is. Rafael, so grateful to have you on Millionaire Secrets. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. It's a real pleasure. Fun to be here.
Yeah, it's great. I love your story. You know, I was $500,000 in debt. So it's kind of nice in hindsight when you have like a story that's got like that real punch of like, let me tell you where I was. And now we can, you know, you can see where I am. And those stories are so inspiring, and yours sure is. Before we get into all the amazing stuff that you're doing now, can you kind of take me back in time to even like childhood? Like, what was your trajectory that got you to that place where, you know, you were kind of down on your luck and weren't living the life you wanted?
Well, I think really early on in my childhood, there was that tendency to want to help people. I was talking to adults about their life problems when I was, you know, 6-7 years old. So I think there was a seed there a long time ago, but it got buried. And I really just struggled a lot. I had social anxiety as I got into my teens. I got into depression, suicidal thoughts, just some really dark stuff. Went through therapy. It helped me a lot. And later got into personal growth, and it completely changed my life. But before that, the way I grew up, it was in a small town, you know, really on the farm, you know, my first house that we lived in with my parents, like right next to the farm. And yeah, it was kind of secluded. I was very introverted. I was very quiet. I was a very careful, shy kid. So you can imagine when I started doing YouTube back in 2014, I had a ton of anxiety. I was really weird and awkward. My mannerisms, they were kind of cringy. I was swearing a lot to try to compensate. It's pretty funny. yeah, that's awesome. That's kind of what led me into all of that. A lot of social anxiety and a lot of fear. And I felt like I needed to go through school and the traditional system. And only then could I maybe be successful one day and make enough money to be okay. And of course, that wasn't true. And I later found out. But at the time, you know, it was pretty dark and I hated going to school. So it was really tough for me to try to, you know, maintain any form of happiness or joy when you're just every day doing something that you don't like doing.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I had a challenging relationship with school myself. And clearly you've overcome that anxiety quite visibly. You know, you got a thriving YouTube channel, approaching 100,000 subscribers. It looks like you put out about one video a week.
Correct. Yeah. I did one video every day the first year too, and struggled to get views back then and even get 100 subscribers. Took me 6 months. Yeah. But since then, obviously learned some tricks and got a lot quicker and better at growing.
Amen. I equally did a video a day. Yeah, probably at least a year.
Wow. Nice. I didn't know that.
I did. Yeah. I've got over 500 videos now on my channel, and I've only been building it for a little over 2 years. But same thing, you go back and watch my earliest videos. And even now, you know, I've got 25,000 plus subscribers now, which it's only, you know, a 2-year-old channel, but the early videos, you know, there's like 17 views, 41 views, 12 views. And it is, you put yourself through those reps to try to build the person that you're becoming. And eventually, you know, the cocoon cracks and the butterfly emerges, right? And it's so cool when you see it. So you grew up on a farmhouse in northern Norway?
Yeah, pretty much.
How do you even farm land that's that frozen?
No, it's very farmable in the summer. You'd be surprised. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, we had some cows. I mean, I guess they were technically my uncle's cows, but still we took care of them too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty peaceful, but in the winter, it would get cold and everything dies, obviously. So not.
Yeah,
not
how cold is cold? Tell me what cold is in northern Norway.
I mean, below freezing is still considered a pretty nice warm day.
So right.
Zero Celsius. But yeah, we get to minus 30, minus 35 Celsius around here.
Yeah. So for us dumb Americans, minus 30, you multiply times 1.8. So minus 30 is 54 subtracted from 32 would be what? Negative 20, negative 30, something like that.
Sounds about right. I would never dare to do math live on an interview, but good on you.
Well, I didn't nail it, but I think I got in the vicinity. But yeah, so like negative 20, negative 30 for, us Americans, it's cold. And that was your environment growing up. And so where were you a janitor? Were you a janitor in that town or did you move to a city or what?
I mean, I tried to apply to every job I could, right? But I dropped out of school when I was 18, 19. I was in the UK for a year as an exchange student. I really kind of started pushing through my anxiety at that point. But when I came back, I moved back with my girlfriend and, we needed money to support our lifestyle and to actually survive. So I tried to apply for every job. Everybody turned me down. Actually, pretty much nobody replied. That was mostly how it went, right? You go to an interview and then they just don't follow up with you. They basically just ignore you. And I did that everywhere. And yeah, nothing. Crickets. The only job I could get was as a janitor because my mom worked in the kindergarten and I had gone to that school. So that was my primary school, my early years. So it's super embarrassing. I remember I'm mopping floors, scrubbing toilets, and my teachers are seeing me and, I can just feel it. It's like, look what became of him. Nice one, Raphael. You dropped out of school. But little did they know, I was starting to build my business and I was starting to work on my passions. But of course, at that time it was rough and I didn't know if things were going to work. Back in 2014, the entrepreneurial landscape was different. It wasn't normal to build an online business. It's becoming more of a trend nowadays, which is amazing. I'm super happy to see that. But back then, to even find a good mentor, it was a bit shady. I just remember it not being normal. And everybody looked at me like, you're crazy. What are you doing? Stop this. Just go to school. It's free in Norway. University is for the most part paid for. So what are you doing? Just go get a stable job. You'll be fine, right? Go be a psychologist if you like that, if you're interested in it. But I hated it so much. I couldn't sit through it. If I absolutely had to, maybe I would have, but I knew there was another way. And so I took my chances and I'm so glad I did.
Yeah, I resonate with that. Took my chances. So glad I did. I mean, it begs mentioning that you're in good company being a, a personal growth expert and, content creator who used to be a janitor. I think there's a guy that some people might've heard of. His name's Tony Robbins.
Yeah. Right? I knew that was coming. Yeah. Everybody says that. It's almost the same story in many ways.
It's funny how that works. Who did the same thing. And it makes a lot of sense. You get so good at, literally cleaning up other people's shit that then you can build a career helping people clean up their own shit, right?
That might've been one of the best things I've ever heard, to be honest. Yeah, one of my clients referred to me. Actually, I've heard this a few times. You're a janitor still, Raphael. You're just cleaning up my mind. And now you're cleaning up my business too. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's true, right? Well, and there's gotta be some, I was a jazz musician, which respect to all the jazz musicians out there, but let's be honest, we take a lot of shit too. We deal with a lot of shit. I mean, that's a hard gig. There's something about doing these jobs that are like just a grind, just involve, mistreatment, just being in like an inferior position, emotionally, like as a jazz musician, there were gigs that I did where they would just stiff us and not pay us. And, we were broke musicians. What were we going to do? Right. I mean, you just take a lot of crap and there is something really empowering about that where you realize, hey, like happiness has to come from within. Otherwise, I'm going to be hopelessly dependent on trying to find it externally. And, happiness, fulfillment, ultimately success, whatever you want to call it. So I don't know. I think there's something kind of wonderfully formative about that if you can get out of it at some point. I wouldn't want to do it for life. But And you mentioned, I mean, it says here you were obese too. Like you struggled with your weight. What was going on there? There's usually more to that than just, you know, an Epicurean taste.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was just eating my emotions. It was one of the few ways that I could cope. So it was video game addiction, about 14 to 16 hours a day. I would fake a stomach ache. I remember this very, very distinctly. I would fake a stomach ache, say, I'm sick. I can't go to school. And then I would try to sneak and play video games for 14 to 16 hours. As many days, I think my attendance rate was something like 50% or less. So it just shows, you know, oh yeah, of course. Yes, I was really sick that whole time. No. So that was part of it. And then it was eating anytime I felt like, you know, just uncomfortable, especially after social situations or a day where I had to talk to somebody and I didn't feel comfortable. So yeah, I lost about 65 pounds, maybe a bit more than that, pretty quickly after I got into personal growth. So it's interesting how, you know, when you're in that space mentally where you're really unhappy, it doesn't just feel like that on the inside. It literally manifests for some people in different ways, you know, maybe an addiction to drugs or alcohol. But for me, my vices were video games nonstop and eating a lot of food that I shouldn't be eating, you know, just too much excess.
Well, you know, I've never been hooked on video games, but I could have gone toe to toe with you at the buffet. when I went online, it was 2008, my quote rock bottom, massive debt, but also a mass of blubber. You know, I'm like a 185 right now. And I think I was about 220, 225, but like, I probably also have 15 or 20 pounds of muscle I didn't have back then. So I think I literally probably had 50 or 60 more pounds of just fat back then. And it's so true what you're saying. When you're not happy, you look for anything in your reach that you can, that gives you that sense of control and satiety. Like, I can make myself feel better in this moment if I put this, you know, I don't know, donut in my mouth.
Yeah.
I can control it. I can control my feelings in the next 5 seconds by eating this donut when I spend most of my time feeling out of control. It actually kind of makes a sick sense, really.
It's actually really weird to hear it be put that way, but you're right. I think that's part of what's going on there is, hey, I do have control, even if it's for a brief moment. Now I can feel that pleasure. And even if it goes away, at least I felt it for a little bit rather than not feeling it at all, because otherwise things are so hopeless, you never feel it. And that, I think, so in some ways, those coping mechanisms, you know, we make them sound evil and like they're bad, but inherently, I would say video games helped me. You know, it sounds really like, oh, if he would have just quit, then maybe you could have gotten your life together sooner. And maybe there's some truth to that. But I also think I might not have lasted that long, because when I got online, I could change my personality, right? I was on the headset with the boys and I was the leader in the group there. And I was a completely different person. In fact, part of who I am today with my clients and when I run my masterminds, things like that, you know, part of that personality, it actually has a lot of similarities. I'm very driven, I'm charismatic, I care about people. I had those traits there, but they were hid when I was out in the real world, right? And that was the challenge.
You know, I think that's really interesting. What do you think that was? What was it about the virtual world or whatever I don't know what video game it was. I assume it was like what do they call them? MMR, massive multiplayer.
There's a lot of online RPGs, but I mostly just played shooters. I was a big Call of Duty guy and I would play sports games and things like that. But we would still build a team and we would get competitive and very serious. And I even competed for money. I placed top three in the world for FIFA at one point, or actually a few years. So yeah, I made some money from it even. It shows like I was serious and I was dedicated. I had the willingness to work at it. But of course, I never made anything serious out of it because it was more an escapism for me. And the reason it was easy online is because, you know, you're hiding behind a personality. Nobody knows your real name. Nobody knows what you look like. And when you're overweight and super anxious and awkward socially, then that was the best place to be because I could just express myself and not have to hold back because, oh, well, like these guys don't know who I am. They don't know where I live. They're never going to see me, you know, in real life. So it's all good. Funny thing is, I actually met up with a lot of my friends and some of them are still my good friends today. So it's funny how that works out. And we spent good quality time together and had great conversations and remained friends, but it's funny, but it just allowed me to be expressive and be myself already, or at least a snippet of myself to be viewed there online.
Do you know a guy named Eric Sue? or do you know of him? So he has a book coming out called Leveling Up, and his podcast is called Leveling Up. And he takes that term leveling up from video games. He was a huge gamer, and he applies a lot of gamer strategy to sort of the idea of leveling up in life. It's pretty interesting. Anyway, I thought I'd mention that.
I love that. Yeah. I think we were actually connecting with Eric, my team as well, to potentially be on his podcast. So it's funny that you mentioned that.
Yeah, he's great. I was on his show, I think it's just been a few weeks ago, and I had him on my show a few months ago, and both conversations were just amazing. He's such a great guy, which is a little bit of a plug for anyone listening. Go check out the episode with Eric Sue.
Right. I love it. Yeah.
But so I have a thought about what you're saying. You know, this whole anxiety thing, it seems like it's become such a thing in the world. Like, you know, you don't read Shakespeare and hear him talking about, you know, Besmelda, thou doth suffereth with anxiety. Like, it seems like it's a new thing, right? By the way, I just made up the name Besmelda. I feel like that
means- I thought so. I was not so fluent in Shakespearean, but that seemed a little bit questionable.
It's like Griselda, and I don't know what that was. But anyway, it seems like it's kind of this thing that's almost like emerged out of the almost like deconstruction of social mores and culture, like the, what do they call it? The postmodern society seems to be almost consistent with the emergence of anxiety, or maybe we've just come up with new words for old conditions. But it's interesting to me the way anxiety, and I'm honing in on this because, you know, I talk to a lot of aspiring and emerging entrepreneurs in my company Entre, people that are trying to turn that corner to really get control of their life. And this anxiety thing, man, it's a plague. It's of bubonic proportions. I mean, it cripples millions of people from going after what they want. And there's this tendency to describe it as almost a very physical condition, which I know it manifests physically, right? It's like, but they talk about it like it's like having a, you know, like a tumor on their shoulder. Like I have it. It's organic. Yes. It's part of my body. There's nothing I can do about it. But yet, isn't it interesting that when you alter the external circumstances, people can't see you, they don't know where you live, you know, things that have nothing to do with your actual biology, suddenly the anxiety's gone? That would argue that it's not as causally biological as people maybe kind of make it, if it can be altered that much by circumstance.
I think I'd have to agree there. I think to a certain extent, you might say, well, it's still there. You just have an environment where you feel safe. And that's why it's a little bit easier for you to maybe express yourself and be yourself more. But at the same time, you know, what helped me get over my anxiety? Was it some magical healing process or some injection, right? No, I mean, I just started doing things that were uncomfortable. Like I started talking in front of the camera every day for a year. I hated that. That was the worst thing I've ever done, but it's also the best thing I've ever done. So it changed my life, but I was uncomfortable. And so pushing yourself and stretching yourself and getting out of your comfort zone. I often have this thing with clients too, where, you know, it's sort of like, okay, I'll start once I'm ready. It's the same thing with anxiety. I'll talk to people once I don't feel anxiety. No, 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 no. Mm. What you got to do is talk to people so that the anxiety will go away, right? You can't expect it to disappear without doing the action that you would be doing once it's gone. You have to act in accordance to what it would look like after the finish line. And then if you do that, then it's not this thing that's in the way. It's something that's there with you until it's not, because it doesn't have to be a permanent part of your personality and who you are. And I think personality is a lot more moldable in general than what we make it out to be. Because I remember being an introvert, being very shy and very careful in certain environments, around certain people. And then around other people, oh, my best friend. I don't have a problem talking to my best friend, right? Most people don't feel anxiety or fear expressing their ideas to the people that they trust. But it's because of the way we feel around new people and how uncomfortable we are and how we used to our comfort zone we become, that it's so challenging to actually, you know, be our real selves all the time.
So you said a few things that for me just stitched together brilliantly. You talked about, I can't remember exactly how you said it. I was trying to remember it when you said it. And then I was like, wait, listen to what he's saying. Don't just keep fixating on what he said. But it was like, in order to do the thing, to get over the thing, you have to do the thing that you would be doing if you were over the thing, or something like that. Right?
No, exactly. That's it.
Yeah, that was brilliant. And you also mentioned that, well, you felt safe. So anxiety then seems like a belief about the world, that the world is unsafe. Therefore, I feel anxiety because it goes away when I feel safe, right?
Right. People but are judging me. There are thoughts linked to it, right?
But that's not biological. That's psychological. It's a belief system. I believe that the world is unsafe. Therefore, I have what to me is a very reasonable fear. My amygdala is feeling the same fear that you would feel if you were being chased by a bear.
Exactly.
But that's because you believe that the world is as scary as a bear.
Right. But, and what is it wired from? What if I get cast out from the tribe? Right. That's our old outdated biology anyway. So it's basically these belief systems that hold true because of our perception of a situation. So if I view the world now more so, I would say really completely as friendly, cooperative. I'm not saying that everything is great and it's all sunshine and rainbows, but for the most part, people are pretty nice. If you treat other people well, if you connect with other good people, if you don't seek out problems and, you know, drama, and you don't create issues in your own life, it can actually be a pretty smooth ride. You're still going to be challenged. There will still be obstacles, but I wonder why. It's such a curious thing. Why was I so miserable all the time? Why was everybody around me treating me so poorly? How come nothing would go my way? How come I could never, you know, catch a break or get some luck? And now it seems like everything goes my way. I don't even have to try. I mean, people reach out to me. Deals close themselves. I don't have to convince clients. It's beautiful. What happened? Well, it's the mind shift, right? Yeah. Everything is in your head. And if you believe that, hey, everything's bad, not only will it be bad, it'll get amplified even more. Even if the external circumstances don't match your beliefs, eventually they'll start to match them, right? So I started shifting the way that I thought and consistently holding utter dominant thoughts, like thoughts around, hey, you know what? It's not that hard to build a business. It doesn't have to be weird. I don't have to struggle. I don't have to grind for 16 hours a day at this to be successful. I could put in 3 hours a day and it could go just as well. Right? Just be smarter. Don't work harder. And just shifting these things. And all of a sudden, funny, it's actually adding up and it's working.
Yeah. So to kind of tie up that point, it's like, if anxiety is about believing that the world is unsafe, how could you ever get over it unless you allow yourself to experience the world and realize that it's not unsafe?
That's so spot on.
Right?
That's perfect.
So how did that happen for you? You know, 2014, were you still a janitor in 2014?
Yeah. So that's the year that I really switched over.
Okay. That's when you started your channel. You started making videos. By the way, I coach thousands of incoming entrepreneurs and I tell them all, I'm like, I'm not going to tell you, you have to make videos, but I can tell you that it's the single biggest thing you could do to accelerate your progress as an entrepreneur nowadays. Just brand yourself on video. I don't care if you're an auto mechanic. Make a YouTube video about how to change your oil and optimize it for your local town of, you know, I can't think of a town in Norway, sorry. But only because I'm stuck, because there was this one choir festival that they went to in my high school in Norway, Stavanger. That's what I'm trying to
think. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So if you're an auto mechanic in Stavanger, make a video like Stavanger oil change, you know, and show people how to do it. And 1,000 people are going to watch that and go, that's really cool. That guy taught me how to change my oil. He must be such a nice guy. He didn't even charge me for that lesson. But you know what? I don't want to change my oil. So I'm going to go see him and I'm going to pay him to do it because he's the one that taught me for free, right? I mean, that's video is such a powerful thing to unlock growth in your business and build your brand. And yet, so therefore, and I'm sure you deal with this too, people are terrified to do it, like terrified, mortified. And for you, you were already terrified just to go face the world. How did, you know, I've seen a lot of people not get over that hump. Credit to you for doing it. How did you do it?
Yeah, credit to you as well, Jeff. I mean, you did video too, and you've been so consistent as well. So I love that story. And I think that for me, it was just, I had enough. Could it really get any worse? What did I have to lose? I was playing video games and thinking, by the way, video games aren't bad. Like I said, I mean, sometimes I still play video games, but it's more out of pleasure and fun and, you know, catching up with some old friends. It's not this, I need it so that I can get high and feel good and numb myself. But anyway, it was really just that decision, like enough is enough. That's it. I'm done. It was anger for me. I got frustrated at myself. Like, no more of this BS. I can be better. I have more in me. I have some real potential. I was listening to personal growth videos, you know, seminars. Jim Rohn was one of my favorites back then. I listened to Tony Robbins as well, all those classics. And yeah, just something switched in my brain. I said, that's it. It's over. And every day for 1 year, that's my minimum. I just committed to it. I said, I don't care how it feels. I don't care if I have the worst day of my life. As long as I'm not dead or in a coma, if I can speak, right? Even if my voice is relatively gone, I'm recording it and I'm putting it up. And my rule was, I don't get to go to sleep unless it's done. So as you can imagine, sometimes it wasn't done. And guess what? I was up at 4 or 5 a.m. recording not only one, but two videos, because I figured, oh, the next day I'm going to be tired. I'm not going to want to do it. So I better get ahead of myself so I don't have to deal with this again and keep falling behind. And by sticking to that and just saying, I'm following through no matter what, 1 year, I don't care what happens, because most people, they're doing it for the result, right? I want the subscribers. I want the inbound leads. I want, you know, ad revenue. No, that's not how you grow something for real. When you really mean it and you commit to yourself, hey, I'm doing this for me, it's a completely different journey, right? If you're doing it for an outcome and a result for somebody else to give you approval or validation or to get paid for it, it's not the same. So the core, you know, some people say, oh, I do coaching or I run this business because I care about people. But what if we take all those people away that you're serving? Would you still do what you do? And most people, you know, they would say no. And for me, it had to be yes. It had to be, I would do this no matter what. I don't care what anybody else says or thinks. I would do this for free, you know, maybe not for the rest of my life, but for 1 year for sure. And that was so strong, because then when I made them, there was no question of, oh, how many views did this get? Oh, never mind, less than 10. Just forget about it. I should go to school. No, 1 year, no matter what. 6 months to get 100 subscribers, another 6 months to get my first 1,000 every single day. And over the course of that year, I made six figures in my business because I messaged literally every person that subscribed. I found them on Facebook. I then went into Facebook groups and used other marketing strategies too. But the point is, because of that commitment, it sort of forced me to just follow through on it. And yeah, that gave me permission to just keep trying even when I didn't have the external results to show for it.
Yeah. So I want to make sure everybody caught that. You know, you were working as a janitor.
Yeah.
And you started making videos. And by the way, I assume you were still overweight when you started making the videos.
Oh,
so
correct.
If I go back on your channel to the very beginning, do I get to see like the double size Raphael?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I tried to hide it, but you will. Right. You'll see it.
You're like,
yeah,
you're wearing like two sweatshirts. And
right. you can just see it from my face. It's very, you know, it's very expanded. So.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not poking fun. I live it, dude. I totally get it. It's beautiful. Right. It's so beautiful to have overcome, you know, your mess becomes your message, right?
Exactly.
And it's so cool. And, you know, I just want everybody to catch, like, we're talking about, it's not like Raphael, like, quit as janitors, you know, that people get obsessed with this whole burn your boats thing. No, just start wherever you are. Just start. In your case, make a video, commit once a day for a year. I don't know how much a janitor in Northern Norway makes, but I'm guessing it's not 100 grand.
Nothing. No money, just barely able to survive.
And so by the end of that year, you had made 100 grand with less than 1,000 subscribers, but just by using that as, cause you know, people have these goals, like, you know, they got to have so many subscribers, and you know, now your content has reached over 100 million people, but that can't, like you said, that cannot be what sustains you.
No.
But at the same time, it doesn't take that much. This, I try to explain this to people all the time. It doesn't take that much to be able to extract a life impacting result, because clients or customers, literally every customer is one person. You can have a list of 10 people and have 10 great customers. Like, you don't have to have thousands and tens and hundreds and millions of thousands or whatever. So anyway, that's so cool. So did you know from the get-go, like, did you have a vision or like a mission, almost like a real clarity about what your business was going to be? Or were you just making kind of content from the heart?
Yeah, I had no clue. I didn't even know coaching existed. I didn't even know what coaching. I barely knew personal growth, right? I really just understood that, hey, if you think differently and you change your thoughts, and then this stuff will happen. And I was just putting two and two together, trying to figure it out for myself. And I thought, okay, every day what I'll do is I'll just talk about the breakthrough that I'm having or the most recent thing that I'm learning about. And every day I was reading and watching stuff. So the content was coming into my brain. I figured, this is easy. I just take it from there and then kind of, you know, not regurgitate it. That would be a little bit sad, but it was more so like my own take, my own spin, my own twist on it. And what it evolved into was understanding that, hey, you know, people have problems in their lives. What do they struggle with? So I started looking on forums. You know, back then forums were actually pretty big.
Right.
And you'd find these personal growth forums and people would ask questions about psychology. You know, they would talk about maybe depression or anxiety, something that I'd gone through. I didn't claim to be a licensed therapist because I wasn't. I didn't say that I was some, you know, huge authority. I just try to help as a normal person, more like a friend. And before I realized, you know, this is profitable and I can make money on this, I was really just doing it because I felt like it was the right thing to do. You know, I was sharing and just trying to improve my own life. And I figured, why not do that for other people too? So the intention was not, all right, let's go build a six-figure business and quit my job. Now it's going to be all great. You know, I heard about this entrepreneur thing and it sure sounds great to me. I'm going to live the life in Bali on the beach. It wasn't anything like that. And it really was all about just caring for others and realizing if I'd been in so much pain, there are a bunch of other people going through it too. What's most personal is most universal. It's one of my favorite quotes. So it's just really just seeing what I was going through and thinking, man, how can I help others who go through this too? That's how it originated. That's how it all started. That was the intention behind it. And growing and improving. It was selfish too. It's like, let me get better.
Yeah, which is fine. You know, my therapist is very emphatic about distinguishing between self being selfish and being self-interested. You should be the most interesting thing in your life. If not, level up, man, like get more interesting, you know, be interested in self and want to grow and develop self. That's not selfish. I think that's so powerful. So did you know, before I ask that, how did the first customer conversion happen? Like when you went from like, I'm just a guy talking and growing and sharing to like, now I'm a guy getting paid to help. How'd that happen?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So first of all, I tried to sell websites because I figured that would be more of a real service that people would pay for. So I tried to call my driving instructor. I thought, hey, I'm going to sell him a website. This should be easy. His website is kind of bad. And I just looked at it. I thought, this is bad. Let me call him and tell him that it's bad and ask if he wants to buy. So that didn't work out. He laughed at me. That was cute. You know, good little experience there. And after that, I just thought, okay, you know, can I do something with this? And I remember launching a website and I think I called it like Passion Blueprint or something. I don't have anything like that now. I don't know. I just figured that was a cool name. I'm going to show how I'm building my passion and document it and make a product around it or something like that. I don't know. That didn't really turn into anything. I made this packaging. I got freelancers to help me with an animated video, spent some money, that failed. And then I was just still doing the videos. I was getting comments on the videos. And one of the comments was like, hey, can you make a video about this topic? And I thought, oh yeah, cool. I love those comments. I got a few of those, but that was the first one that I just thought, huh, this is interesting because he also had some other things in there about sharing his situation. So I thought, okay, cool. Made the video. And the next day he's like, hey, can we talk? Because he saw the new video. I made the video the next day. He asked me, can you help me with this? I literally did it the next day. I uploaded it. And I guess he liked that. And before you know it, we were on a call. And he said, I'll pay you for coaching, you know? And this is just around the time I was starting to join a few masterminds around business. So I started to realize, hey, this can be real. You can do coaching. There was a guy, his name was Tim. I don't remember his last name. It's so long ago, but his name was Tim. And he was teaching life coaches how to make money. And he told me, oh, you got to make a blog and you got to do SEO. And you got to do all this stuff. And then 10 years from now, you'll get your first client. And I was like, what? I've been going for a year and I'm already like, I need to start, you know, I hadn't even been going for a year at the time, but I just thought, wow, that's too slow. That's too crazy. But right at that time, when we had that conversation with that client, with that potential client, I realized, oh, wow, this is doable. I charged $160. He dumped me after a month. So I was terrible. I didn't even do a very good job. I was sweating in the chair. There was a little puddle probably next to me. I mean, maybe I'm over exaggerating. Maybe it's true. Should ask my partner. She would probably vouch and say there was a little puddle. But that was the moment where I realized this is possible. Like, you can do this. Like, yeah, you didn't work for long, but at least someone paid you and you did help him. And he actually was kind of okay with what I did. He just didn't want to continue. So I thought, huh. And that's when I learned more about sales, you know, consulting, like how to do consulting properly, how to position yourself better. Before you know it, I had a DSLR camera making the videos that the following 6 months, the first 6 months was all on my phone, mostly in the bathroom or some awkward location. After that, it was a DSLR from Canon and more serious quality music in the background. Like we paid for royalty-free music, even when we weren't making any money. So yeah, we were just pouring it on. And then before you know it, clients started coming in and I started having more of those conversations.
That's so cool. I love that. I love those just super organic origin stories where it grows out of, you know, sounds cheesy, but it grows out of sharing and caring rather than, you know, selling, let's say. Yeah. That's so cool. So I know that in the work that you do, you help a lot of people deal with like past trauma. Like it's not just, hey, I want to scale my business. How do I get my ads to convert better or something? It's a lot of like, from what I can tell, I'm looking over your notes and your website and your YouTube channel. It looks like a lot of also, you know, helping people kind of grow into essentially like what you did, right? Emerge yeah. from their shell of fear and hurt and whatever. How do you, and you're not a licensed psychologist or therapist or social worker or anything like that, right? So how do you, what's your sort of methodology to help people figure out what is it that's really holding them back? Because if you ask someone what's holding them back, they're going to give you a bunch of stuff, but none of it's going to be the real answer. Usually, at least the first time. How do you get down a few layers to the real stuff? What's your approach?
Yeah, so I use a lot of different techniques. And because I've been through therapy myself and, you know, just having a lot of coaching being done to me, I know what it looks like to be on the receiving end. You know, I continue to keep getting help and support myself. So I know what it feels like to ask for help, how you'll probably BS a lot in the beginning and tell people things that aren't, you're basically shooting flares, right? You're like, oh, it's over here. This is the problem. So yeah, I realized that pretty quickly too with my clients that, hey, this might not be the real issue. And often it's so easy, right? Just record this little 1 minute ad and then we run it over here and you're going to pay $25 per lead. And then you're going to convert at an average of 50% or 25%. You make 1,000 per sale. You're going to make a 10X on your ad spend by doing this, this, and this. Tweak this. Right? It's not so hard. This stuff isn't, it's not rocket science. It's pretty easy. You get overwhelmed by the numbers when you're beginning early on. But once you get used to them and you start learning how to act like a business owner, that's not so difficult. But what's hard is the mental side of things, right? The psychology that goes into it, like why I'm not worthy of earning, you know, 50, 60, 70K a month or even 10K a month. Like my first 10K month, I thought, oh, this is crazy. I made more than my dad and my mom combined and they've been working their whole lives. And right, like doesn't make any sense. So I think that really for me, the most important thing is digging into what's the trauma and what are the beliefs and what are the thoughts and the way that we draw it out? Well, yeah, we sit down and we do a deep dive. So we use processes like EMDR, which is based on deep sleep, and it basically heals your brain. So it simulates deep sleep and restores, you know, some of those healthy natural connections, releases a lot of the tension and the emotion that's associated with the trauma. So let's say, for example, let's just make this practical. You know, you're 6 years old and you're in class and you speak up and when you're not supposed to, and teacher tells you, shut up, stop that, be quiet. I don't know, maybe in the old days that even slapped the wrist, right?
Right.
Or maybe get even more violent. But that doesn't seem like a big deal. Like, hey, everybody, you know, that's normal. But for a little six-year-old child, that's traumatic.
Right.
Like, your context is, here are my peers and now I just got embarrassed in front of everybody. I just got told to shut up. I'm weak. I don't have any power, right? I should just be quiet, be careful, avoid confrontation. There's a lot of things that are happening in there. And most of that never gets healed. And it's crazy that we're this far in to human civilization and we haven't figured out, hey, this stuff needs to be healed, like for everyone. It's not like, oh, you went through the most horrible things. Like you went to war and that's why you need therapy. And you're the only person, you know, somebody who had extreme trauma is the only type of person who needs therapy or needs to work through this stuff. Doesn't even have to be with a therapist. So for me, I realized, okay, working through that stuff, unwinding that stuff. That's why when I got on the video, you know, on the camera, I was so, because my reference experiences said, when you speak up, people will tell you to shut up. You know, when you try to talk to strangers, they'll think you're weird, right? I remember like approaching a random person in the street at some point, you know, in my early childhood and trying to talk to them, and they just kind of like backed away and didn't want to talk to me, maybe because they were afraid to be seen talking to a little child in the street. I don't know, who knows why. But in your mind, you think, oh, I'm weird. There's something wrong with me. I don't deserve it. When you're working a janitor job, beliefs manifest and form that tell you, hey, I'm not worth more than, you know, 10 bucks an hour, 20 bucks an hour, whatever it might be, whatever country you're in and what the minimum wage is. But yeah, that was it, like unwinding all of that. So with clients, I use those techniques and the same process that I went through. We do a lot of digging. We find what's the reason for the emotion, what past experiences actually caused this to be a thing, what are your beliefs around it, and then what would you like your new beliefs to be? How do you want to think about it? How do you want to feel? Do you want to feel a tension in your stomach? Or like me, I had, you know, basically a frog in my throat when I would try to speak. Or do you want to feel loose and relaxed and have fun and enjoy it?
Yeah, it's cool. It's so powerful. I mean, you know, I'm a therapy junkie. Like I'm not, you know, some people are like, they act like having a therapist is like having a mistress or something. Like you're not supposed to talk about it. I'm like, shoot, man. If there's no like ethical conflicts, I'd have my therapist over for Christmas dinner. Like he's like part of my family. But you know, some people are, you know, have different feelings about it, but that work you're talking about is just so, so empowering. And, you know, every time, and I'm sure this is the same in your experience, every time you talk to somebody who's had this, you know, caterpillar to butterfly type of transformation, it's always the deep personal work. Yes. It's never, oh, I changed my business model and switched up my offer and all of a sudden this massive success just exploded in my life. No, it's like, it's always like some crucible they went through to do that deep work on themselves. That's why I'm so passionate about it. You know, one of the things I noticed, I don't remember where I saw this in your work, is you were talking about being driven by inspiration versus being driven by desperation. And as I'm hearing your story about like when you kind of got started, it sounded like it was a little more desperation. You were definitely. Man, screw this. Like I got to change. I'm desperate for change. Tell me a little bit more about that though. It seemed like wherever I saw it, it sounded like something you had some strong thoughts behind.
Yeah. So in the beginning it was, let me prove everybody wrong. Let me show myself that I can be good enough. I'm not good enough. I need to become good enough. Right. And it was very needy, validation seeking. I want approval. I want to be told that I'm right. I want to know that I'm a good person. And what I realized is, well, that actually puts you in resistance to achieving the goal itself. Because what you're saying is, I'm not worthy right now. I need to become worthy. Once I'm worthy, then I can have it. How do I know that I'm worthy? Everybody else will tell me that I am. And when do usually people acknowledge you and love you and praise you? When you already feel good about
after
yourself,
you have it. Yeah.
You own it, you achieved it. Now you can say, hey, look at me. So I realized that's not a good place to be working from. I did it for a while and it's okay. It's just not sustainable in the long run. It's better than not starting though, right?
So yeah.
It's better than not moving at all. But moving from inspiration, and that shift really looks like, you know, hey, I don't need this. I'm not attached. I don't need the outcome. I love doing the process. I'm doing it for fun. I understand that life is a game. There's no winning or losing. It's pretty much just kind of arbitrary and then it ends, right? Yeah. So it's like you kind of detach from all of it because you realize, hey, like what's going on? And when you wake up like that, I think the sparkle in the eye returns and you get excited and you're not, oh, gotta do the podcast interview. Oh, gotta get on there and push myself through. It's like, this is fun. I'm having a great time. And what's the difference? Well, it's where you're coming from, your perception. That determines everything. Because if you have the right angle, then all of a sudden making the video isn't a burden anymore. It's not this thing that you have to push yourself through. It's like, oh, I can't wait to make a video. It's my favorite part of my day. Imagine going from, oh God, anything but this, to this is the most fun thing that I know of, right? There's nothing more exciting than this. And it's crazy how the same thing can be perceived so differently by the same person just in a short span of time, shifting the way that they view it.
Yeah. I mean, I've experienced it. I know exactly what you're talking about, and it is, it's what I want for everyone. And ultimately in my experience, that it just comes down to, and every person's got to find this switch on their own, but that switch to flip, that's just, you know what? I just don't really, I'm not worried what other people think anymore. I'm just not. Anyway, well, hey, listen, man, I know that unfortunately for time is short because I'm loving this conversation. How can my audience, who's probably loving this conversation too and wanting more of it, how can they go get more of this? I mean, obviously we've mentioned your YouTube channel. Tell us how to get, you know, how to find that, any other social channels you'd like us to find. And then also for anybody that wants to contact you about your products or services.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff. And it's been a real pleasure and so fun talking to you as well. Yeah, for me, the main channels are YouTube. So if you just search Raphael Eliason, we release a video every week. And then we have our podcast, which is actually pretty big too. So just my name on Spotify or iTunes or pretty much a Google search and then podcast at the end of it, right, they'll find me. And the way to work with me is to go to eraphael.com. So we still do a free call and a free consult with everybody right now. It's for a limited time, so I'm not sure how long we'll keep it up. The demand is sometimes a little bit more than what we can manage, but we're doing free calls and we basically jump on, see where people are at, see how we can help them, make them a plan. And then if it's a good fit, we work together. If not, all good, win-win either way. So that's how that works.
Yeah, it sounds like an offer you can't beat, and you can get lots of free consulting at his amazing YouTube channel, which I actually spied on a few of your videos before we hopped on, and they're really good. They're really good. I appreciate what goes into that. Man, this has been amazing. I just am grateful you came on Millionaire Secrets. Love what you're doing. Count me a fan. And to my audience, I will say, go check out Raphael. He's got some amazing work out there and amazing value for you. Any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
No, I just want to say thank you, Jeff. It was really fun coming on and I appreciate your time.
Yeah, this has been great. Thank you. Thank you to all the viewers and listeners out there of the Millionaire Secrets Show. You are the most amazing audience in the world. I'm a little biased, but I believe it. And you're definitely the most amazing part of this show and why we do what we do every day. Thank you so much. We will see you on the next episode.
You just finished this episode of the Millionaire Secrets Podcast. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please like and share this episode and do leave us a review. Let us know how we impacted you today. Your next step toward creating your awesome life is to join me and thousands of others in the Entre Nation community, where you'll receive free training, networking with other awesome life seekers, access to live events, discounts, merchandise, and other awesome perks. Head over to www.entrenation.com. That is www.entrenation.com, and join us today. And of course, do please follow me on social media. I can be found on all the major social networks at Jeff Lerner Official. Thank you again for listening, and please go be awesome.